Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Heart of Sports with Jason Springer and Jeff Cohen, powered by ELEC 825. We are thrilled to join you on WWDB 860 AM and 97.5 HD2, part of the Beasley Media Group, ready to help you move into the weekend, talking about all the news in the world of sports. Jeff, if you blinked, you missed the NBA Playoffs Conference Finals. That didn't last long.
Well, let me ask you a question before we actually talk about the games.
Okay.
Will there be an NBA Finals game before our next show?
No. Yes, actually, next Thursday. There's a full week in between June 6th. I made sure to get the date right and check it, since I am always the master calendar screwer-upper of the show.
You passed the quiz on this one.
Yes. I almost
got it. It is crazy. This is not the Super Bowl. You should be flexible enough. I understand there's concerts and other things that happen in arenas, but at some point, you don't want to lose momentum. And right now, they don't really have momentum because it's been boring.
Okay. Thank you. It has. They're just not competitive. You get these double-digit leads. Last night's game, Minnesota barely showed up. I mean, Luka dropped 20 in the first 10 minutes, and they weren't in the game at all.
I think Luka outscored the Timberwolves during that period.
In the first quarter. He's really good.
He's playing on one leg, basically.
Yeah. And I didn't realize how much of a trash talker he is.
Really? How did you miss that?
Because I don't get to see as many Mavs games. Like, I see them when they're national.
All you have to do is watch a Mavs game for 5 minutes.
Yes.
He doesn't stop. And when he's not talking trash to the other team, the problem with him is he's not likable because he's constantly complaining to the refs. Like, there are a few guys in the league that complain as much as he does, and his game gets better when he stops. And that's what I don't get. Like, at some point, you have to take control of your own thoughts and emotions on the court. And for some reason, he often doesn't.
Did you have any interest in either of the conference final series, the way they played out? I mean, Celtics swept the Pacers. You know, once Halliburton got hurt, you kind of knew that wasn't going to be even a competitive series. It looks like Porzingis is going to come back for the finals for them, which is a big add. You know, and they got one game for Minnesota, but Minnesota just not ready for primetime against Dallas there. Anything you saw out of those series?
I'm gonna floor you because you asked if I have any interest in either of these. Okay.
Okay.
I am a lifelong Celtics hater. Okay. As a Sixers fan.
I understand.
I will be actively rooting for the Celtics to win the NBA championship. I never thought I would say that. Yeah, because I will not.
Oh, because of Kyrie. Okay.
Yeah, I'm just tired of it. Okay. And I don't need now a week of the rehabilitation of Kyrie Irving based on nothing.
There is actually an interesting conversation on Inside the NBA about that. Separating the two or not. And there's a lot of people who just want to go from sort of the reclamation project that they see of Kyrie skipping over the part that got him to needing reclamation in terms of how his behavior was and the things he said and how he acted. And now it's all about the new Kyrie. And I'm watching it and I'm going, Jeff is going to lose his ever loving mind watching this.
Well, the problem isn't necessarily rehabilitation. It's not necessarily whether or not because I believe people can evolve, and I believe that people should be given second chances, and I believe that people can change. The problem is the commentary is not that. The commentary is almost just a washing of it, to the point that I heard, I'm not sure if this is right, but I thought Dan Orlovsky, somebody tweeted something about they've been watching this particular playoffs and they haven't seen any of the stuff that people complained about. I don't know if it was his quote, but, and I don't want to get it wrong, but somebody said that. And it was stunning to me that that's the answer, is to sit there and say, well, you know, I don't see it today. That's not the way this works. What he put out there was hateful. What he put out there was something that you cannot just ignore. If he says that he's learned something from it, That's one thing. Have you seen acts of attrition by him?
No.
Because I haven't.
It's just a moving past it. I mean, that's everybody wants to close that chapter.
I'm not saying you should ban him from the NBA. I'm not saying that at all. But I'm tired of people just saying, okay, well, I don't see it today, so it must have never happened almost. And that's people need to take accountability for their actions.
Are you going to be able to enjoy watching what is an interesting finals matchup? Despite, you know, the lopsidedness of the path to get here, you've got Tatum and Brown or Luka going for their first championship. Kyrie obviously looking for his second championship. Porzingis and Kyrie facing their former teams. Jason Kidd going for a title as both a player and a coach. I mean, can you get yourself interested in this, or
no,
will it be tainted no. by...
And I love basketball, but I cannot, okay? Because there are things about... I've gotten to the point in my life where I sit there and say, morals matter.
Do I just have no morals matters. Then? That I'm able to separate these things?
I'm not discounting anybody who wants to watch it and can separate the two.
And I'm not
telling you that my flaw is that I cannot separate the two. And there is, I don't want to go into, just like I really didn't want to go into the Kyrie thing, I really don't want to go into Jason Kidd as a person either. and so if people want, they can look it up themselves, and it takes 5 seconds to look up facts and you can look it up. I don't need to hear the Boston fan... How many storylines are not going to be about something positive or just finding ways to make it positive? I don't really want to see the storyline of what Kyrie said about Celtics people from Boston and what a few people from Boston may say in return to him. I don't want to hear about the fact that Luka Doncic and Kristaps Porzingis apparently didn't get along. The storylines are, for the most part, not storylines that I particularly am interested in, nor do I want to follow. If I could just watch basketball and somehow discount all of those things, I wish I could. I can't.
And it's funny because I wasn't saying that you were saying that I have no morals, but somehow
no, I know what you were saying.
I'm able to have that cognitive dissonance where I know all these things happened and yet I'm just watching a basketball game.
Those were two big words in a row.
I know. That's
very impressive for a Friday.
Look, if somebody just tunes in for the first time today, they'll think I'm smart. Now, context would show them that with all these years of a show, I'm clearly not. But see, that's why context matters.
What I'm saying. See, if they just clip that 30 seconds where you say cognitive dissonance, they'd be sitting there going, huh, look. And then they could go back and they could go, yes, you're smart, but... I'll give you another example.
The truth is I'm not.
You got the date right for the first NBA Finals game.
They would think I'm good at scheduling.
Exactly. And if they look back at the history of the show, they would go, oh, that's not his history. Dates are not particularly his thing. So.
I love how we're able to relate successful professional sports athletes to our own follies. We're like very good at that because you and I are nowhere near the skill and talent level that any of these athletes have. Yet we can still find ways to come up with a narrative that ties us into what they're doing very well. So
I guess it's a skill.
So, all right. You're not interested. Will you watch? Like, will you hate watch? I don't hate watch.
See, I'm not one of the... We've discussed this on the show for more than half a decade now. I don't hate watch. I'm not somebody who normally would watch something to root against somebody.
I still can't get over you're going to root for Boston.
Well, it's not so much that let me rephrase that. I don't know how to phrase it. Because it is baffling.
Confusion reigns on the heart of sports today. Jeff doesn't know what he is.
Exactly. I can't remember a time in my life where I did something like this. Like, there's not been a single moment that I can say that I wanted something good to happen to the Celtics. But between Jason Kidd and Kyrie Irving, I just can't bring myself to be happy, joyful about the Mavericks winning. I'm not sure I'll be happy the Celtics win.
Sounds like
if they want to make this soccer and we can have a draw, I'll be good with it.
It sounds like you have a lot of deep thoughts that need to be explored about this all.
Yeah, well, you know, there's only so much. See, unlike hockey, where I have rooting interests and there are happy storylines, basketball right now for me doesn't have any of that. And again, it's not just that. There's so much stuff going on that just doesn't make sense to me, that that's frustrating. So
like what?
I don't. The draft.
You mean Bronny staying in the draft? So he's ranked 54 now while the Lakers pick 53.
But he's going to get drafted in the first round because somebody, it doesn't look, it's by all accounts a really crappy draft.
Do you feel like bad for Bronny at all, by the way? Like, yes, he has every opportunity, but like the guy's LeBron's kid. How's he ever going to get out of his shadow?
Well, that's part of growing up, isn't it? I mean, we can all tell, you'll see over the course of time, you'll see your children as they get older say that they don't want to walk in your footsteps. I encountered that with Michigan. And so it happens over the course of people's lives and they have to deal with it. I feel bad that his father isn't able to say, you know what, I really shouldn't have talked about this. This is not something I shouldn't talk about it behind the scenes. I shouldn't. The only thing I should be saying is whatever's going to make you happy as my child is what matters. Not, gee, I wish I could. Because I look, I'm not an athlete. You're not an athlete. I don't know how cool it would be to play with your kid. I've coached my kid, but.
No, and look, I just say dumb things on the radio. So I lower the bar for success for my son to surpass me regularly. Well,
look, we have interviewed lots of players as they were coming up through the system, especially in baseball, about fathers and sons, parents and children. And you know, I'll never forget us interviewing, sitting in the Iron Pigs dugout, interviewing Roman Quinn. Mm-hmm. And Roman, when asked, I don't know if it was you, I think it might have been you that asked the question about, you know, what was it like to have his dad coach his team?
Kind of
with my son sitting next to us helping out, and Roman Quinn saying something to the effect that was, let's just say I went home with my mom. Right. Which to me was one of the greatest lines I've ever had said on a show. I don't know about you, but
you could relate to that.
It is
too.
It is hard for children in general to not be stuck in the shadows of their parent. To be stuck in the shadows doing the same thing as your father, who's one of the greatest of all time, is incredibly difficult. And the best thing for him, without knowing him, so I don't particularly know, but my thought on what would be best for anyone is to not be stuck with that. Because what is it going to be like? Let's just play this out. Let's say he's on the Lakers. Do you not think that a large number of people in the organization, including players, are going to think every time he gets in a game, regardless of whether he earned it,
there's daddy's boy.
Yes.
Yeah.
And nobody, and he doesn't deserve that.
It'd be better if he went to a team that his dad was not on and just played basketball and got evaluated for his skill level. And let's be honest, if it wasn't Bronny James, he probably wouldn't even be coming out in this draft.
Yeah, I mean, if this were end of career stuff, it would be one thing. You know, when Ken Griffey Jr. and Senior played together, that was towards the end of a career. It wasn't Griffey Senior did not manipulate the situation to make sure that he could play with his kid necessarily. I just don't think doing this to 19 years old is going to put him in the best position for success.
This is the most draft talk you've done with me since the Sixers actually had picks that counted in the first round.
Well, there's not much more to talk about because, again, this draft is
terrible. So here's my question, though. Let's get back to the Sixers. Keith Pompey, our guy, reported this week that the Sixers would give Jimmy Butler a max extension. So you finally have draft picks and cap space. We've talked about, you know, is Paul George the guy? Is Jimmy Butler the guy? Do you give away that draft capital to lock in a guy like Jimmy Butler who comes here at 35?
What draft capital? What do the Sixers have at this?
They have a bunch of first round picks now. Okay. They, through the trades, like while I didn't like the Simmons and Harden and that stuff, and I have questions about Morey, they were able to get cap space and draft capital. That goes away. If you trade for a Jimmy Butler, if you sign a Paul George, we can debate whether he's older, he's good enough, injuries, whatever at this point in his career, but you're not giving away other picks to build your team in the future. Here, you bring Jimmy Butler in, he's here for 3 years, he's 37. by the time he's done. Like, at that point, you're turning the team over to Tyrese Maxey and Joel Embiid and Jimmy are gone. I just don't know what the best path is for this team.
You know, as George Costanza once said, for those that watch Seinfeld, maybe it's best they do the opposite. Of every instinct that they have, they should do the opposite for a change. And going star hunting and break. By the way, this the three-headed monster of the NBA is a thing of about to become a dinosaur.
Well, you do have Porzingis, Tatum, and Brown in the finals, so you do have a three-man.
See, well, I disagree with you there because
you don't count Porzingis.
No, I would count Holiday.
Okay,
I would definitely. Holiday's gonna if the Celtics win the championship, Holiday is the reason.
Absolutely, I said that to somebody this morning. I was dropping my son off at school, and we were talking about it. And I said Jrue Holiday is the difference. The toughness he brings, he just brings a different grittiness to the game.
And if you're the Milwaukee Bucks, whoever the general manager was, the Milwaukee Bucks should be sitting there going, okay, I decided to go after Dame Lillard, a one-dimensional player who's a lot shorter, and got rid of one of the key pieces to my championship.
Well, and look, if you go the Butler direction, Embiid has already had health questions. Jimmy Butler hasn't played more than 64 games in a season since he signed with the Heat, since he left the Sixers. So I don't know what you're creating as that team other than big names, which the Sixers seem to like. But it's just ironic to me that the Sixers wouldn't give a max to Jimmy when he was in his prime, but now they'll give Jimmy a max. It's the most Sixers move they've done in like a week.
I have another question.
Sure.
How long is it going to be before Pat Riley alleges tampering?
Oh, that'll happen. We'll lose a draft pick over that.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. That'll definitely happen. Well, okay.
That was that when I saw that report, that was my first thought.
And it's not just the Sixers,
by the
way.
The fact that the Sixers are possibly going around saying this.
There's a couple of teams that are apparently interested in paying him. While we're on the coaches real fast, coaches are getting paid, man. Ty Lue, 5 years, $70 million.
Okay. Deserves it.
Does he? Does he?
Well, who?
Does he deserve 5 years, 70?
He's one of the best. He's one of the best coaches in the NBA. He's not the best. I mean, between Popovich, Spoelstra, I mean those are the best. And Kerr, those are the best three.
And those are the guys that are compensated
among the next level. I would say Ty Lue is up there. He's won a championship, and yes, he won it with LeBron. But he won it with LeBron and a bunch of. It was like Danny and the Miracles. I mean, it wasn't a bunch of great players that he won with.
Well, you mentioned the Lakers. Their coaching search is apparently down to two. The Pelicans assistant coach, James Borrego, and J.J. Redick.
Doesn't he do a podcast with somebody on that team?
Yeah. Again, it's like bringing in your son to coach the team. Like, how are the other players going to feel when his son and his co-host are there running the team? And
didn't
getting
we
minutes?
Just go through this with Steve Nash?
Yeah.
Now, Steve Nash is Canadian, which is not a bad thing, but he's also very mild-mannered. JJ is not
at all.
Yeah, so Nash, I think, was more prone to being submissive to his stars. I don't think JJ Redick will be. So I think that's the one difference. But bringing in somebody into the Lakers organization who has no coaching experience, and let's face it, JJ's one of the brightest minds in basketball, but he has no experience. No front office experience, no coaching experience, no anything other than playing basketball experience. And coaching is a very specific skill.
Without a doubt. And look, I mean, now we've got a week to talk about all these storylines before the NBA plays basketball again. Talk about poor planning. I don't understand. Why don't we leave the basketball talk there and let's keep the baseball talk going here. Jeff, needed to find somebody who knows more than me, at least, to talk about. So we got Pat McCarthy to join us, radio broadcaster for the New York Mets. Pat, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great, guys. Great to see you. Thanks for having me.
Are you all packed for London?
Not yet. I'm going to start packing probably on Monday because I have to go to DC Tuesday morning. I am a classic late packer and overpacker. So...
Okay.
I have to make sure that I have everything prepared.
So you bring way too much and do it way like right before you're about to go to the airport last minute kind of guy?
No, I always get to the airport on time.
Okay.
Let me clarify.
I try.
I'm an efficient airline traveler. So I have TSA pre-check. So I know kind of how to like time things out, but I don't often check bags. So a lot of times if I don't have to check a bag, I'm more of like an hour and a half type of guy. But this time I'm taking the train down to DC. I'm going to meet the team in DC and then we'll all fly to London on Wednesday after the game.
I like the fact that you like switched your answer as if somebody's going to fact check you. You could say whatever you want. You could say, look, I never miss a flight and I get there 2 minutes beforehand. Nobody's going to know.
Now, I've never missed a flight.
Yeah.
However, I used to be like have severe anxiety when it came to flying. Like it used to freak me out. So I'd need to be there like 2 hours, 2.5 hours early minimum, like sitting at my gate. And eventually I was just like, okay, this is ridiculous. What are we doing here? So now, yeah, I would say as long as I'm not checking a bag, I'm like an hour and a half beforehand, sometimes less, you know, sit back, relax, and then get on my flight.
Well, good thing you chose a career where you don't have to travel a lot.
No, very rarely.
Yeah. So
very much at home.
I was at, until last night, I was at the last Mets game that they won, unfortunately. And I only say unfortunately because I left in the ninth inning. So, Jason, feel free to have fun with me about that. But
no comment.
It's been rough for the Mets over the beginning of the season. A lot of struggles that I don't think anybody anticipated. What do you see as what happened so far?
Yeah, I think it's been a combination of a lot of things. I think the main issue comes down to is just inconsistency, because when they get great starting pitching, they don't hit. When they get great starting pitching and great effort from the bullpen, they don't hit. When they do hit, sometimes the starter throws well, but the bullpen doesn't throw well. So they just really haven't had one of those games where everything has come together. They've been ravished by injuries once again, like we saw last year. You know, you haven't had Kodai Senga yet all season. You just got David Peterson and Tyler McGill back, who are supposed to be pretty important depth pieces in that starting rotation. Francisco Alvarez has been out for the last 6 weeks. You lost Brooks Raley for the season very early, and he was a really important part of that bullpen. And then, as big as it's been, Edwin Diaz has not been Edwin Diaz yet. So there's a combination of a lot of things. I think the fact that you haven't gotten your big four going all at the same time, and Lindor, Alonso, McNeil, and Nimmo, they've all shown different stretches where they can carry your team. But for the team to go back and win 101 games like we saw back in 22, all four are going to have to put together seasons where they can all kind of be clicking at the exact same time. And then you throw JD Martinez in that mix as well, and he's been pretty consistent. He's been the JD Martinez that they expected him to be, but they just haven't gotten everybody going at the same time, and I think that's the biggest issue.
Do you think that this meeting that Lindor called the other day is going to help? Because, you know, the one thing that we know down here is that this Philadelphia locker room is they're all rowing in the same direction. They all seem to be enjoying it. Do the Mets have the possibility to turn this around because the locker room can solidify?
Well, I think it starts there. I think that, you know, baseball, for as much of it as an individual sport, it's a total team sport as well. I mean, as we've seen from clubs around the league, you can have the best player in baseball. You could potentially have the best two players in baseball and not make the playoffs. I mean, as much as individual stats and performance drive the game, you need the guys behind you to also be holding their own weight and getting things done. So I think it starts there. I think the fact that they had the team meeting the other day and then Francisco came out with a 4-for-4 performance last night with a home run, I think that does say something about him, that he's able not just to, he can walk the walk and can also talk the talk. So I hope so. I hope that turns things around, and I hope that's what, you know, gets this team moving in the right direction, because this is a really important stretch coming up. Because all of a sudden, we're going to get back from London in a week, 10 days, and we're going to be in the middle of June. And from there, it's like you have to kind of be in a, you have an idea of which direction you're moving in with 6 weeks until the trade deadline. So they've got 2 months to kind of figure this out, but you'd have to think that really they have about 3 weeks.
Well, and you were somebody who got to see this Phillies team up close when the Mets played them in that weird split series, 2 in New York, 2 in Philly, and then you'll head to London. Talk about what you've seen from this team. Obviously, off to the hot start, 39-18 record. Even after their 2-4 road trip, where they seem to scuffle a little bit, they're still six games up on the Braves, who lost Acuna. What are you seeing out of the Phillies team?
Well, number one, I think right now, just with the lead that the Phillies have built, it's their division to lose. So I think, you know, for the last couple of years, the thought process for the organization and for the fans has been, and just figure out a way to get into the playoffs. I think right now you have to have the eyes set on the division because just the way that the Braves are, again, ravished by injuries, you know, to a much larger scale than a lot of teams around the league. The fact that you lost Strider for the season, and now that you lose Acuna, so not only did you lose a Cy Young contender, you just lost the reigning National League MVP, and not just for a short period of time, but for the entire year. Now, the Braves have proven that they can overcome those injuries and figure out a way to still win the division and ultimately win the World Series like they did without Acuna back in 21. But I think the Phillies have put themselves in a situation where they can, you know, not only win the division, but potentially finish with the best record in the National League and get that bye for however you want to look at what that bye means. I think that's the position that the Phillies have put themselves in. It has to do with the fact that the role players, I think, have stepped up in huge ways, whether that's guys like Cody Clemens and Edmundo Sosa. They seem like they've really stepped in with the absence of Trey Turner. And then, of course, it's Nick Castellanos is starting to figure things out, it seems like. Kyle Schwarber's hit a couple of home runs.
Careful saying that name around Jeff. He gets shaky.
I'll be sure to avoid it. But then, you know, guys like Alec Bohm are having not just all-star seasons, but potentially MVP caliber seasons. So when guys that are not expected to perform at the level in which they are and are sustaining it, I think that's what makes the Phillies such a dangerous team, especially when the fact that you think about that the bullpen hasn't been great and the starting pitching has really just been the backbone of the team over the last couple of years and especially this year.
I actually want to go back to a conversation that we had the beginning of last year, spring training. There were all these rules going into effect, and you were very good at explaining to us what you thought was going to happen, and that you were learning it yourself, and that was how helpful it was coming from the minor leagues to have seen some of those experiments. Now that this has all been in place for a year and a half, what are you thinking about the rules and those rule changes and about how most of the players have adjusted to them?
Yeah, I think at this point, I don't even think about them, right? Like, I don't even look for a shift violation. I don't look for the pitch clock. Gosh, I couldn't even tell you how many pitch clock violations we've had this year. I want to say it's only a handful. It just doesn't happen very often. Guys have kind of figured out ways to manipulate it and work with it. Who knows if the PitchCom violation, the PitchCom malfunctions that we have are actually PitchCom malfunctions, or they figured out a way to get around the rules a little bit. But no, I think it's been great for the game. I think it's definitely picked up the pace of the game, and a lot of people talk about just the timing of the games too, that they're shorter. The pace is what's better, and I think that's the most important thing. Is we're not waiting, you know, minutes upon minutes in between pitches. I mean, there's a tempo to the games, and I think that's what people want. I'd have to dive deeper into the statistics to see if they've actually, you know, what the average differences are and stuff like that. But baseball is ever changing. You know, we're seeing it this year with the obstruction rules and how first basemen are setting up at first base on pickoffs to avoid any kind of ambiguity. So, you know, the game's ever changing. The game is adapting to the new generation, and I love the quality of the game right now, and I hope it's just going to keep getting better.
From your perspective, from you and your colleagues, has it changed the way that you call a game? We're used to, and I'm about to really date myself, and I'll ask you a question about this later. I can recall Lindsey Nelson, Ralph Kiner, Bob Murphy being the guys that called the Mets games. There was a lot of time between pitches to talk. Now, there's not so much time, I would assume, to talk, and you really... Just like we all have to focus on the game as fans, you have to focus on the game more. Have you noticed that there is an adjustment with your colleagues in the way that the game is called?
Yeah, I think the storytelling aspect of it is much different. You know, when...
Unless you're John Kroc, you just talk through whatever.
Well, but it's TV, so that's the difference, right? With TV, right. you have that luxury that you can talk over pitches. On the radio, we don't have that luxury. You know, as... we do things a little bit differently with the Mets is that we have two play-by-play people doing the game at all times. You know, we don't have a former player on the air. So the analyst role, quote-unquote number two role, is a bit different just because you don't have as much time to interject and you don't have as much time to kind of add color to the, you know, to the stadium. And that's what made, you know, Bob, Ralph, and Lindsay so great is that they were just constant. They were your eyes, right? They were, and that was their goal. So we have to focus much more on the aspects of the game itself. I think for Keith and I, who both came from the minor leagues and a lot of times worked solo, it's a little bit easier. But for a guy like Howie, he's been doing it for one, you know, one way for 30 plus years. So there's definitely an adjustment period. I think we're starting to figure it out. I think we've figured out our cadences. I think we've figured out our tempos and our rhythms. But yeah, it was definitely an adjustment period. But more than anything, back in 22, when the rules first were implemented at the minor league level, there was definitely an adjustment level there. I think at this point, we've kind of adapted to what the pace of the game is and just made sure that, hey, you know, we're watching the clock too, and that we're making sure that when the pitcher is set, we're back at the mound.
You're somebody who watches a ton of baseball. We talked to Jamie Moyer a few weeks ago about the change in pitching and max effort versus going 5 and 6 innings. And then you see this Phillies starting staff with an ERA of 2.73. They've got 18 starts of 7-plus innings, 18 starts of 6-plus innings. That 18 starts of 7-plus innings, only 10 teams had that in all of 2023. That was more than 10 teams. Can you talk about what it does for not just the starters, but the bullpen and the rest of the lineup when you have your anchors that are going that deep each game?
Yeah, I think that anytime you consistently have to ask your bullpen to get 12 outs, they're going to be tasks. And they're going to run into arm trouble and they're going to be tired and they're going to hit walls. It's just natural. So, and depending on how a bullpen is structured as well, a lot of guys out there either have no options left or they're optionable pitchers. So you have your mainstays that are going to be out there every single night. And if they don't have any options left, if you use them twice, 2 days in a row, chances are they're down. And you don't really have a ton of wiggle room. So if you need to continue to ask your bullpen to get 12, even 9 outs at a time, eventually you're going to run into issues where you're going to have to make decisions, and guys that are potentially pitching well are going to have to be optioned out just because they have options, or guys are going to be DFA'd just because they don't have any options left and you need to bring new guys in. So I do think it, you know, it messes with the continuity a little bit. But more than anything, I think it just, it overexposes guys as well. You know, one of the benefits to relievers is a lot of times they're hidden. If guys are kind of coming out of, you know, coming out of the woodwork and nobody has a ton of, you know, film on them, which is hard in this day and age because they have scouting reports on everybody. But it's like a bench player. When you overuse a bench player, a lot of times pitchers figure out how to get them out. Same thing can be said about relievers. If you have to constantly run out relievers, the book's out on them. And they figure out, okay, he might have a nasty split finger that we hadn't seen up until this year, but all of a sudden we figured out how to pick it up, and he doesn't become as effective as he was when they didn't necessarily have, you know, all of the tape on him early on. So, yeah, I think it's an amazing benefit to have a starting pitching crew that throws strikes. It keeps the defense engaged, but it allows them to go late in the game, so that way you do have your relievers, for the most part, night in and night out when you need them.
All right, so let's talk about the lineup construction. Jeff has lost the battle of Kyle Schwarber should not be a leadoff hitter. He's now hitting 280 with 5 home runs when leading off this season. Alec Bohm playing better than many people thought that he would. Going back, I mean, you saw him in the minors, what people thought he would in terms of his defense at third base. Jeff loses his mind over my love of JT Realmuto and his now 17-game hitting streak. Talk about the horses on this team who are actually showing up now. And, you know, those bats and went silent last year in the playoffs. Is it, why do baseball teams seem to go from all on to these crazy slumps where they just can't hit anything? What is it about baseball?
It's a great question. I do think hitting is contagious. I don't, for what reason, I don't know. It just seems that And maybe it's that because the pitchers are just easy to pick up in that situation. Like there's just so many variables that run into a baseball season, right? There's weather, there's the pitcher that day, there's injuries that crop up that we don't necessarily know about. There's shadows. There's just all these like random things that factor into a game that sometimes like it causes just an entire lineup to go cold. And for sometimes some guy just has it that day. Like for some reason he's able to spin the baseball better than he was in previous days. So I don't know. I'm sure somebody a lot smarter than me has actually studied why it happens that way, but it's true. It does. That for some reason, when one guy goes cold, all of a sudden two or three guys go cold and a team runs into a stretch where they can't hit. So that's, I think, what makes baseball so special. That's why we have to play 162 games, is because eventually there's going to be so many peaks and valleys in a season that for a 1 week stretch, a team's going to look like the worst team in baseball. And then, you know, all of a sudden they're the A's and rallying off 20 consecutive victories. Like, it's just, I don't know. I wish I had a better answer for you, because it's very curious. And I do think, again, it goes back to kind of what I said earlier, that it's the ultimate individualized team sport, that there is a sense of, there's an ego to it, that a guy says like, well, I'm not going to be the one that makes the out. You know, if there's seven guys up there that are getting hits, the eighth guy is going to say, well, I'm not going to be the one that ruins it. I'm going to go up there. So I do think there is an aspect to that. To go back to your question about like lineup construction, I just think we've gotten away from the traditional lineup construction. I just don't think the prototypical leadoff hitter is what the prototypical leadoff hitter was anymore, just because of there's this massive emphasis on base percentage. So you're going to throw guys up there that get on base and just set the tone for the guys behind them. And the other thing is it's a lot of it's matchup based, right? Because there's so many specialists out there, and you need to, even with the three batter rule, you need to construct your lineup in a way that you're not going to get caught late in a game with a left-hander coming up and all of a sudden you don't have a right-handed hitter to go to on your bench. So it's a really interesting way of, you know, that's why managers, I think that's how they can really put their fingerprints in the game, is how they figure out a lineup. And, you know, whether that's, you know, putting Kyle Schwarber in the leadoff spot or, you know, Carlos Mendoza with the Mets the other day just made a massive flip, and he moved Brandon Nimmo out of the leadoff spot, somewhere that he's been for pretty much his entire career. And he took Francisco Lindor out of the three hole with the hope that it was going to kind of shake things up, and it had an instant impact. For what reason, I don't know. But Lindor, who was hitting below the Mendoza line for most of the season, all of a sudden over the last 2 weeks is a 300 hitter again. So it's just, you know, there's all these little wacky things that just go into the mindset of a baseball player that can just switch things up a little bit.
You know, one of the things about baseball, at least what baseball's trying to do, in addition to try to make the game more compact or move better, is focus on the personalities. You're lucky enough to cover a couple real personalities. The Mets have, as you mentioned, Lindor. But to me, Pete Alonso seems to be a guy who absolutely loves playing baseball. What's it like to cover guys that have that kind of infectious personality?
Yeah, it's the fun part of the game, because you get to know them beyond who they are on the field. So like a guy like Pete is, he's just like a little kid out there playing, and that's how he plays the game. He plays the game hard. He's ultra competitive. I mean, just think about the fact that 2 days ago he gets hit in the knuckle and you're thinking, okay, he's done for 6 weeks. Like that's your initial thought when it happens. And then all of a sudden the scans come back okay, and it's like, yeah, no, he could be available tonight because it's just a bone bruise. And then he steps up and hits a double that ultimately scores the tying run in game one against the Diamondbacks. So it's like, so guys like Pete, you just have so much respect for, because they are just gamers and they're just built differently, that they go out and they play the game the right way. He goes out and, you know, he's not afraid to show emotion. You know, it's funny. I had a reverse take on emotion in the game. When I was a young kid, I probably had the approach of an older gentleman when it came to the game. Like, oh, you know, be there, you know, act like you've been there before and drop your head and run. I'm like, that was the dumbest take I've ever had in my entire life. Like, baseball is so much better when players are showing emotion and showing personality. And that's when you get the conversation of, well, you know, back in the day, if he had done that, he would have gotten hit in the ribs. Well, yeah, he would have, but that's not the game today. And you know what? If a guy wants to take it into his own hands and brush somebody back, all right, so be it. Those are the unwritten rules of the game. But the next guy and his best player is going to do the same thing as well when he hits a ball into the second deck. So I think it just baseball needs to be more fun. You know, it's a gentleman's game, sure, I guess. I don't know. But like put some emotion into it. Have some fun. That's what I love about Francisco Alvarez, who goes out there every day. You know, once the Mets get him back, he's going to be a lightning rod in that lineup, not just because he's a catcher that can hit 25 home runs, but he just brings an energy to the ballpark every single night that you can't fake. Francisco Lindor's the same way. I mean, the guy plays with flair, and baseball needs more personalities in the game. So it's exciting to watch. I'm grateful for it because it makes my job a lot more fun as well.
I mean, I think that's part of why the fans like this Phillies team so much. Obviously, the winning, you know, people, everybody loves a winner. But I said to Jeff, I want to see this team win because I want them to be remembered for the fun that they had in this city and the way that they were playing, sort of like we do with the 08 team here. With you know, I mentioned last week to Jeff, you know, Pat Burrell wasn't Mr. Smiley that everybody thought he was the best personality when he's here, and now he's beloved for the dog and the parade, and so like those things happen when you win together. The personalities of the team are embedded on the city. We talk before we let you go. We talk a lot about players' journeys. You've had your own journey that had a cool moment like a week or two ago. You had gotten hit by a vehicle, had your own recovery, and you got to bring the doctors to the Phillies game to celebrate. Can you talk about your own recovery and what that moment was like for you?
Yeah, I mean, first and foremost, huge thank you to the Phillies for helping set that up because, I mean, they were instrumental in making sure that we were able to have that night with all my docs and nurses from Capital Health. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be here without them. You know, I mean, they took one of the worst moments of my entire life and turned it into a blessing. You know, the team at Capital Health in Trenton were just unbelievable. I was there for 9 days and they cared for me, you know, every step of the way. So, you know, my two surgeons, Dr. Quinlan and Kelly were amazing. They were miracle workers for what they did to make sure that I was up and moving again. So for us, just to be able to have them out there, they were able to have the entire trauma team out there. You know, it was a really full circle moment, to be able to host them and give them an opportunity just to see the impact that they had on my life for me and my family to get back to our everyday lives, and a little bit of a sense of normalcy. So it was a really special moment. I've been able to develop a really tight relationship with those guys just because, well, we spent a lot of time together for 9 days in the hospital. But yeah, they were unbelievable. I tell people all the time, they took the worst experience of my life and made it tolerable. that's like the best way that I can put it. But it's just because it's a testament to the care and the compassion that the doctors, the nurses, everybody, the security people showed. So, you know, it's a funny story. So my family was unbelievable. My wife, Emily, never left my side for 9 days. She slept in the hospital every single night. And the hospital staff never even questioned it. They never said anything about it. It was just like, okay. And my family were there basically from 8 o'clock to 8 o'clock when visiting hours were there. So it got to the point within like a day or two that the security guards at the front desk had all of their passes already printed. So that way each day they could just hand them to them as they walked in. So the team at Capital Health was unbelievable for everything that they did and continued to be, you know, for the last, you know, couple of months since I've had to go for, you know, follow-up visits and stuff like that. They still know who I am when I walk in and stuff like that. It was a really special day for us just to be able to thank the people that made such an impact on my life to make sure that I was able to get back and do what I love to do at, you know, such a quick time.
And Pat, you are so good at it. You know, I remember sitting with Jason in the press box years ago and saying someday he's going to be doing some major league game. Didn't know where. I'm happy it's with the Mets. But I have one quick question. If you, because I told you before, I grew up with these voices. Which one's your favorite? Bob Murphy, Ralph Kiner?
Oh, that's Lindsay. Not fair to ask him.
Wow, that's a great. That's a great question. You know, I because you hear about all three together, right? Like mm-hmm. that's like they're kind of lumped into one group.
Yeah.
But I haven't listened to Lindsay enough just because he was there the shortest period of time. But I can remember because Ralph was still around when I was younger. Mm-hmm. He would still pop into the SNY booth. So to me, like he's the one that I remember because he would come into the SNY booth every once in a while. And I can remember watching Met games and he would be in there. But to me, I have gone back and I've listened to different broadcasts over the years. And I love that everybody has their own Bob Murphy impression. And it's kind of how in Philadelphia, everybody has their own Harry Callis. In New York, everybody has their own Bob Murphy. So that has been the funniest thing for me is like, you think of it almost as like a caricature when people are doing this and you're like, oh, wow, he actually said those things. But I'm just blessed to be able to be able to walk into a radio booth every day with Bob's name. And when you look right to your right, you see a big photo of the three of them all standing together because, I mean, they got the Mets broadcast off and running. We're able to do what we do because of, you know, Bob, Ralph, and Lindsay. Like those are they're the reason that we're capable of it. So I can't say that I have a favorite of the three. I think I have. I'm just fortunate because that I'm able to work in, even though it's not the same booth as them, and a booth that's it's honored for Bob Murphy.
Well, we know you got to head out of here. We wish you a continued great recovery. We hope you're able to get all packed into the airport on time to get to London. And I look forward to keep talking to you about everything. Thanks for the time,
guys.
What a crazy road to recovery from him. I'm glad he's doing well. And I mean, he's going to have some fun over there in London. It's a shame he has to watch as a bad team.
Which team are you talking about? He gets to watch the Phillies, too.
Not the Phillies, the Mets.
Yeah. Well, he's watching both. It's not like he's closing his eyes. You have to watch both teams. So he gets to watch both. And, you know, the Mets have talent. The problem is they have been bitten by the injury bug, but they haven't gotten it together. And that shows you how important the cohesiveness of the locker room is. The daycare group that the Phillies have become and call themselves. They just look like they're having fun. But they're not goofing off, and there's a difference.
They do look like they're having a lot of fun. Before we go to hockey, I did want to ask you two other baseball stories this week, let you comment. One, we've talked to lots of umpires. Angel Hernandez retired. Any comments before I move to the Negro Leagues?
I'm not going to weep for Angel Hernandez. Have you? Is there, other than Cowboy Joe West, somebody who was reviled so much as Angel Hernandez?
No, and there were so many highlights of him just getting it into people.
Low lights, you mean?
Getting that too, or getting wrong or anything. Mm-hmm. So, and then the other thing, you know, we did the interview last week talking about Hank Aaron and his records and his recognition. This week, baseball basically integrated Negro League statistics into the MLB database. So Josh Gibson now is the baseball career leader in batting average and slugging percentage over Ty Cobb and Babe Ruth. Over 2,300 players competing in seven iterations in the Negro Leagues between 1920 and 1948 have now integrated.
And I can't see a single bad thing that comes from that.
It's about time.
It's important. And by the way, you know, you and I talked about this years ago. I went on a road trip across the country, saw a bunch of baseball games. And one of the things that or the probably the best thing that I did on that trip was go to the Negro Leagues Hall of Fame, which is located in Kansas City. And if you've never been, go. It's so important to the history of the game.
Very eye-opening to go there. Let's talk a little hockey before we get out of here. We've got about 7 minutes left. A lot of road teams winning in the playoffs. The road teams won 43 of 77 games so far in the hockey postseason. That's tied for 2023 for the most wins in history at this stage. The overall record is 47 road wins in 2012. They're not far off from that. The Stars and Oilers are tied at 2. The Rangers dropped it last night to the Panthers. I'll tell you what, though. For as not close as the basketball has been,
hockey's the opposite. It's always the opposite.
I mean, you've had 3 of 5 games in the Panthers-Rangers series that have been decided in overtime. The mm-hmm. game last night, even though the Panthers won 4-2, was 2-2 in the third period. You thought maybe you were going to have a fourth overtime in that series. The Oilers came back on the Stars to tie it 2-2 the other night after being down 2 goals. This is fun
stuff.
Well,
that's it. Even the games that look like 5-2 would seem to be a blowout. But people seem to forget Edmonton was down 2-0.
Yes.
Every game is exciting. You will never convince me that there is a better playoff, more exciting playoff than hockey is. Regardless of whether hockey is your primary sport, the one you love the most, you just can't deny that it is the best, for some reason, the best playoff. And NHL always talks about, everybody always talks about expanding the playoffs. No, it's perfect. Just the way it is. Leave it alone.
The excitement is unbelievable. Look, the only reason the Rangers were in that game last night is because Shesterkin was unbelievable.
Yeah, for some reason, the Rangers offense and the Stars on the Rangers offense are the ones that have gone cold at the worst possible time.
So if you're the NHL, what do you want? You want a New York Rangers-Edmonton? Yeah, that's the final you want.
You do not want Dallas. You don't want the Panthers. Especially you don't want the Panthers. You want to talk about a ratings dive. Does anybody know two players on it? Like, even if you're a hockey fan, can you name two players on the Panthers? You can name at least one because Bobrovsky is the guy that the Flyers let go. But other than Trocheck, can you name anybody?
I mean, I can, but...
Right. No. Do you think most people?
No, I don't. Did you watch the game last night? There was something I noticed that I didn't see before, and I don't know if it happens in stadium. Did you watch?
What is it?
So the game was at MSG, and right. I meant to send you a screenshot and a text message, and I didn't. When the Panthers scored, you know how they have the virtual boards now where they can change the signage?
Right. Yeah.
It went to Florida goal. Like, it had the Panthers coloring and celebrated their goal. I'm going to send you the screenshot after we finish the show.
Oh, I will. Painful enough.
Look, for our listeners, Jeff does not enjoy getting messages from me. He humors me.
At 10:30, 11 o'clock at night? I'm not looking at them. I mean, I was up for that game and I did watch the game.
That's why I send them then, because if I wait till the morning, you're going to see them at the same time anyway. So you're not looking at them.
The phone wasn't next to me. I'm sitting there just watching a hockey game. I don't keep the phone next to me. There's nobody that I'm interested in texting during a game that I want to watch.
Just because you're a normal person and I'm nocturnal
and
will watch sports and send things over to you doesn't mean you need to hate on me for sharing information with you, Jeff.
Hey, I do have a question, though, because this is another thing. Like, people find contrived controversies.
Yes.
Like, what is the deal that people in this country seem to have a problem with the fact that all of Canada is now rooting for Edmonton to make the Stanley Cup final so a Canadian team can be.
Well, who are they going to root for? Dallas?
This is a unique thing that I don't get. Like, people say, well, if the Anaheim Ducks are in the final, people in the United States who are on the East Coast don't write for the Ducks. No, that's different. This is their sport, and their sport has been starving.
Yeah, they haven't won it in a while.
And nobody hates Edmonton in Canada. Like, it's not like Montreal versus Toronto. Those people are not going to give up their sides, okay? People in Montreal aren't going to root for the Maple Leafs in the Stanley Cup Finals and vice versa. I don't think anybody has a problem with Edmonton.
No, and people are rooting. I mean, Connor McDavid was the guy, the next guy. They want to see that. I don't blame people in Canada.
But it's not just Connor McDavid. I mean, that team...
They're loaded.
Obviously, because Connor McDavid's on that team, he makes everybody better. But Zach Hyman... has been a scoring machine.
And Skinner's played very well in goal for them.
Yeah.
Are you following? I know you're not a rumor guy, so I generally don't ask you about rumors on this show.
Well, you know how I feel about them, but I guess you've decided you needed to end the week on it. So go ahead.
I do, because we only have 2 minutes. So you only have a little bit of time to go off on rumors. Are you following the rumor that Michkov may end up being here for the Flyers?
No, because every day it's a different story. One day the story is he may not ever be here. The next day he may not be here for years. The next day he may be here. We're going to analyze the fact that he said he's going to try as well. He's going to try no matter where he is, as if that means he's going to be here. Just let it play out. Like, Like, how much time do we need to? I know that there's a lot of stuff we need to fill time with, including what we do. But until something actually happens, what's the point?
Well, at least I didn't try to break down the Eagles schedule for you in June or May.
Like, oh, thank goodness. I'm trying to keep it. Because for some reason, people have decided Memorial Day is when we need to start talking about football.
Well, they are having OTAs right now, and so we can talk about who shows up and who doesn't. And this mm-hmm. is a city that runs on football. I mean, and the it's funny, you know.
No, it see, I don't
believe
that.
The media runs
correct.
On football.
So the media runs on football, but it's not necessary that it needs to run on football. There are plenty of storylines. You can go with your Sixers storyline about who they're going to star hunt for this time. You can go on your Michkov story and you can talk about all the different things that I think the Flyers are going to do to make this team better. Or you could actually spend a whole lot of time talking about the team that has the best record in all of baseball.
And look, the Union
and
are still playing soccer.
For some reason, people need to write. And yes, although the Union is four, they won more, four, lost four, and tied seven.
I sat out there in the rain the other night to watch the game. They just can't finish. I mean, they have lots of opportunities. They're having a problem finishing. They just don't have enough right now. So we'll see what they do.
So what do they need?
Well, they're going to lose Carranza. That's the problem. So they're going to need to fill more.
So why is that? Tell me why as we end the show. Why?
Because his contract is up and he wants to go play in
the middle of a season.
This has been a lot. It should have happened last year. They should have moved him out. That's what they've been planning for. That's why they brought in Ty Burebo, who barely gets on the field. Any final thoughts?
I just don't get it. I really don't understand soccer, that a contract would end in the middle of a season.
So I'm just going to clip that. I just don't get it. And that may be a drop in the show. Thanks so much for joining us this week. Make sure to join us next Friday night to help you start your weekend in style. Have a great one. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Operating engineers are the men and women that move mountains. And the Engineers Labor Employer Cooperative, ELEC, puts them to work. They create opportunities for the men, women, and union signatory contractors of Local 825, repaving our roads, keeping our homes bright and warm, and even building our favorite team stadium. We understand infrastructure. That's why ELEC and Local 825 are ready to get to work.